Hi, I'm Chief Bob Vasquez.
And I'm Dr. Jose Lugo Santiago. Welcome to Leaders and Futures. Let us have a new kind of conversation, one about leading as futures emerge, are yet to happen, or plainly need to be reimagined.
Someone has said that the best way to predict the future is to create it. Although it's impossible to predict the future, one thing is certain, you must lead in it. It's time to think differently about leading.
This podcast is powered by the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight.
Let's get started with today's discussion on leaders and futures. Hola, Lugo. Good to see you again. Gosh, it's been, what, a week?
Buenos dias, Chief.
A short week, though, because it was a holiday and all. And when we have those Monday holidays, it makes it only a four-day week, which means you got to get 5 days work done in 4 days, right? I don't know. I don't care because I don't do it. I'm retired. So good luck with that. I hope you got through the 4 day week.
Yeah, I thought you said you're retired. It's kind of hard for me to believe that because you're constantly working, constantly writing, constantly doing something. So I'm not sure that's retire. I think you just have autonomy, more autonomy now than what you used to have.
That's right. Well, as I told you a year and a half ago, I've retired from the job so that I can do my work. And there's a difference. I don't have to answer to the man, but I do answer to the woman. And I know you know what I'm talking about. I do what I'm told then, smile and nod. 45 years I've been smiling and nodding. And it's been working out. So we'll see how long I can do this. So anyway, a good week.
Very wise.
get it all done?
Yeah, a little bit. We leave a little bit for the following week. You know, we can't try to do everything in 1 week, right? The following week, there's always that going back and assessment, you know, monitoring assessment. Did we do it right?
Yeah.
Yes. Or no, let me add this to it. So that's always good.
Right. Yeah. Measuring, assessing, all of that is important. So
assessing and leading.
And leading. Speaking of the topic that I was wanting to discuss today, and we were already arguing before I even pushed the record button, is the idea of leading peers. I'm sure there's other terms for it, but how do you lead? Well, in fact, two things. We're about to publish one of my books called War Stories, What I Learned at the Air Force Academy Without Ever Graduating, which should be coming out in a few days. A week?
Yeah, we'll see. So I would say in about, 2-3 weeks, right?
Because, okay.
Some of that had to deal with, obviously, as you know, publishing the registration and stuff like that. You know, just admin stuff, right?
Yeah.
That they had to do with people that make sure that copyrights are good and it's
all
registered
the bureaucratic
and
stuff.
And all
yeah.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that you and Waybooks Press do this for me because I don't do that. And I'm going to, I hope maybe by the end of the year, work on a book on peer leading that I'm calling "Moving from Us to They," because I think that's kind of like the perspective that all of us have. One day we're us, we're fellow workers, fellow employees, and then one of us gets promoted. Now that person is they. There's a difference between us and them, they. So how do you get there? How do you, and I think it's happened to all of us. I know it happened to me a bunch of times that I'm just one of the guys, and then all of a sudden I'm in charge. Oh, crap. Now what do I do? Now you argue that it's difficult. I argue that it's not as difficult, but that's why I'm going to teach you, Grasshopper, the realities.
All right. Well, let's go for it then.
Let me put my gloves on so I can be ready. Well, and I think, Lugo, and I don't think you're going to argue with me in this respect. The biggest problem when we move from us to they, when one of us takes over, is that we haven't been taught how to be good followers. You know, all of us are going to be following most of our lives. Robert Kelly talks a lot about that in his book. But if you're a good follower, then your perspective is to follow whoever is in charge, whoever is the leader, which is humbling. But most of us are taught that we're the leader. We want to aspire to be the leader. And I see this on Facebook and on social media all the time. If everyone is leading, who is following? You know? And if you don't know how to follow and you're fighting to be the leader, that's going to create at least some tension, if not just chaos, because wait a minute, I'm the leader. No, I'm the leader. I'm the leader. No, I'm the follower. Let me follow. And I know we've both been in situations where, okay, that person becomes the leader for whatever reason, because he or she is taller or darker or has green eyes or whatever, whatever reason that person becomes the leader. When it's my turn, I would like everyone to follow me with humility, with respect, all of the things that I should be practicing when I'm the follower and that person's the leader. So I think at least in part, if we would teach people to be good followers, then when it's their turn to lead, it wouldn't be as difficult to lead your peers.
But what you're describing first, as you know, that environment that you're talking about is called it's culture. Then the other piece that you describe was beliefs, and individual beliefs and culture beliefs are different. So what happens when those two are put together, some of them merge and some of them clash. So for example, you mentioned that what should happen is that when you're the leader, people should follow. People understand that they're going to follow with humility and stuff like that. That's called culture. That means that the cultural norm in the organization is to understand who's in charge, how we are going to enlist in the efforts of the leader, and why are we going to do that. And then we accept some things, that everything that goes with, not everything, but we accept certain things that comes with that type of following. And that's why we do it. But the truth is that the reason why I noted that before that it was difficult is because we are taught that, just like you mentioned, everybody is a leader. And yes, everybody is a leader, but we are taught that not to be followers, but to be leaders, because the follower word doesn't sound very good, right?
It's the F word, the other F word.
Yeah, doesn't sound very good. So what we do is we learn to all of us to be leaders, and not only to be leaders, to refuse to be a follower. So now you have a bunch of leaders in an organization trying to get something done. So this framework of being contradicts what the organization wants to happen in the organization. And of course, there is conflict. And that's the reason why this thing that I mentioned to you is difficult to lead peer-to-peer, to do peer-to-peer leadership, or you were a peer and now you move to another role as the boss. That transition there is difficult, because the state of mind over time, people accept it, because you have to develop the relationship. Your relationship got to transcend to something new that was not. So it got to be formed. And as it forms, then it either mesh with the organizational culture and behaviors, and some of it align, but it's shaped with the organizational culture. So then it can be accepted. But the biggest problem in here is when everybody believes that they are a leader, then obviously no one is following. But so I think what needs to happen is for us, of course, to understand that everybody is a leader, but everybody who considers themselves a leader is a leader in particular certain situations. In other situations, the person must align to somebody, you know, somebody's effort. And if you do not want to be aligned, then you're in the wrong place.
Right.
But the thing is that then at that point, you are you're following the lead of somebody. And then as you're following the lead of somebody, you are also leading others. And so that role is very dynamic, because you're constantly moving from a follower to a leader, to leader, to follower. And you're also in through all of that. When we're thinking about follower, we're thinking about the actions of, you know, what we're talking about really, about the courageous follower, not just a person who just take orders and doesn't think the consequences of doing, even in the military, that is not something that we want. We don't want just a person that just leads. We want the courageous follower who's really complementing the leader's ability to lead. And so the follower is thinking through this process of leadership and following. and shaping the organization and the leader as they move forward. So it's almost like both of them are teaming up to lead rather than just following. And so that's what that it has to be explained, because people think that this thing about followership is just taking orders. No, that's not what we're talking about. It's never good to do that. It's never good. Everybody will go down the cliff.
Right. And again, as Robert Kelly says, by the way, I haven't written it. Maybe this year I'll read it another book I'll send you for you to publish that'll be called The Other F Word, The Key to Leading Effectively. And that's about followers, being a good follower. But in the meantime, the only person that I know of, and I've read everything I can find on Amazon about following and followership, and most every other book other than Robert Kelly's book sucks. That's stupid. Mainly because it's written from the perspective of a leader, not from the perspective of a follower, which is what my book is going to be about, from a follower perspective, again, from the bottom up instead of from the top down. But and I'll agree with you, Lugo, it's a cultural thing. You want to develop a culture where that is not a conflict. Then you can lead peers a lot more easily. But you're right. We see, although we always say, in fact, I can think of his name, Sanborn, wrote a book called You Don't Need a Title to Be a Leader. And we say that all the time, but that's not what we really support. That's not what we really honor, because we want everybody to have that L word in front of them, that they're a leader. But it's functional. Just like you said, it's functional. There are times when okay, this is kind of almost extreme, but when you take your wife out to dinner, you're going to spend 90%, 95%, 99% of the time following. Where do you want to go, honey? And what's she going to say? Wherever you want to go. Do not answer that question. She needs to make the decision. You need to follow her, or else it's going to be disastrous. You know that every time, right? Every time you get in a car and ask that, where do you want to go? And she says, oh, I don't know. Well, let's figure it out, because I want to make you happy, or else ain't nobody going to be happy. So when I was at the Air Force Academy a few years ago, we had what we call NCLS, National Character and Leadership Symposium. And it was supposed to be run by the cadets. And I'm going to say 75, 80% of it was run by cadets. But we, permanent party, we old folks, knew a lot. We had experience and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, whatever team I was put on, the first thing I would do is I would find the lead cadet who was in charge of that group, of that team, and we'd have a little talk. And I'd bring him in and I'd say, okay, I'm going to do whatever you say. Well, what? I'm going to do whatever you say. I'm going to follow you. But chief, you're the chief. You know, I know that. But you're the leader. But they couldn't understand that, you know, that I was willing to follow. In the other F word, the number one thing I think where it starts, Lugo, is a sense of purpose. What is my purpose? Just like you just mentioned, is my purpose to lead? Is my purpose to follow? Which one is it? And it shifts, you know, it shifts depending on the team that I'm on. Because those youngsters, brightest people in the world, they knew way more than I ever did. I mean, if you and I are going to work on a team with AI, you're in charge. I don't even know. I thought it meant I. No, it's AI. There's two little two words, but that I think it's a sense of purpose. What is my purpose? Is it to follow? Is it to lead? With your children, there are times when you should follow them. Now, you don't let them drown, you don't let them touch the hot stove, but you follow them because they know a lot more than you do, and maybe not so much in content, but at least in experience, it's different.
Context is different in every position that you're in, right? You see the world in a different place. Most people lead in the middle. I would say probably almost everyone leads in the middle.
If they're effective, so, yeah.
Well, because you're always in the middle, of things, you know, the middle of situation, in the middle of responding to stakeholders, responding to a boss. And not only that, also leading. You have responsibility from leading a team to accomplish some things. And then, of course, when that happens, there are people going to resist your authority given. And in some cases, you don't have authority, right? You're just everybody, a boss, in some cases, people do that. Some they don't they say they don't want to play favoritism. Sometimes it's just you got to make a decision, and so they avoid having to make a decision. So they go and say, "Hey, team, we got to do this. Go do." Right. And somebody's going to have to say, OK, you know what? I'm going to be the organizer. The other one is going to say, I'm going to be the recorder. I'm going to be the timekeeper. I'm going to be the moderator. And so everybody got to be able to take roles very quickly. For that to happen, members of the team has to be at different levels in their maturity. And so, some people can say, you know, you cannot always do that with everybody. Of course, you have teams and different stages of team development. Forming, storming, norming, performing, and adjourning. And although people believe that a team may be in the performing stage, very seldom a team is in the performing stage. So they're always going to be, so normally, most of the time, a high-performing team will be in the norming stage. So that means that they are going to have issues that are going to have to be resolved. But for the leader, not to be able to delegate authority, then the team members, and we're talking here about peer-to-peer, they're going to have to deal with, team members resisting authority of somebody. Either the person who's going to, a member trying to bring order to the chaos of that, and, hey, do this, and everybody got to do that. Hey, we either swim together or sink all together. You're going to also, every single one of them, because they see the world in a different place, they're going to have to compete for priorities, because each one of them has a different kind of priority. They have different conflicts of interest. Some and others, it's just their interpersonal issues that already exist in the organization. They have to deal with it. And so team members, or that person who is, we're talking here peer-to-peer, somebody in there, all of them is going to have to collectively decide who is going to kind of be the facilitator, if we want to call it that way, so the team can succeed and get something done. Otherwise, what we will see is teams not being able to accomplish their missions. And that had to do with culture. That had to do with, like we mentioned before, that had to do where you see the world in your organization, and your own personal values and your own aspirations. I mean, and then the other thing that we did not mention that is affecting this peer-to-peer, this relationship on how I lead and leading others, is the reward systems in the organizations. Reward systems affect how everybody's going to behave. And so the road to effective, peer-to-peer leadership has to consider all of those things. And that's why it's not as clear cut as possible as we think. We can say, okay, you know, I have the authority and I'm going to lead. It's just not that way.
Yeah. And again, I'm going to go back to the H word. It has to do with humility. You don't know everything. You can't do everything. You have to do it together. I'll tell you, Lugo, one example I think of this is, I was in Los Angeles when Showtime was, the Lakers were Showtime, Pat Riley. And I always wondered, and I would have loved to have been in the locker room. I can't even imagine. And Pat Riley was not a short guy. I think he's 6'2", 6'4", but short compared to all of the other guys, on his team. So here he is, the coach, having to tell Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Magic Johnson, Cooper, Rambis, all of these incredible athletes, that they're screwing up.
Mm-hmm.
No, not mm-hmm. me, man. You have to be a really big, have a really strong ego to go in there in the halftime and tell those guys, you guys are screwing up, and let me tell you how to fix it. So somehow, and the same thing with Phil Jackson, 12 rings or whatever, to be a champion coach like that. How do you get these guys that are incredible, great in their field, who work together, because somehow you have to, or you get fired. I guess that's what the is inevitable in sports. Football, the same thing. You know, how do you do that? Because those guys, they don't have to do anything. And mm-hmm. some of them don't. You know, they get paid a lot of money and then they don't do nothing. So it's almost unimaginable that one person can do that. So you have to rely on the peers doing it. I suspect. Again, I would love to be in that locker room just to see how it goes, you know, and stay away.
It requires a lot of influence.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Everybody in that team has to be able to see you as an ally rather than the enemy. Yeah. And the enemy of something, and I'm talking about you're taking the position that I'm vying for, the place where I want to be, the rewards that I want, and that person who's being accepted as a leader in a peer-to-peer relationship, that person was able to achieve a level of influence that no one else had been able to do, and that requires a lot of skill.
And I like the idea that you're mentioning the enemy. You know, when we've had, I mean, in the military, when we've had I'll call it a common enemy, an enemy that we can identify, we've been a lot more effective because we know who we're fighting. Where nowadays, you know, in the last, gosh, I don't know, 20 years, we don't know who we're fighting. I mean, you know, it's kids sometimes. It's women sometimes. Where back in my day when I came in, we knew who we were fighting. But and I want to say this, and then we got to go because I don't know why. Okay, it's not old age.
Up.
It's not old age. It's the altitude. Okay,
altitude.
But,
yes.
But when you got to go, you got to go. But I think in the respect of what we're talking about, the enemy is failure.
Mm-hmm.
That the influencer is going to have to inspire the rest of the team to agree that the enemy is failure and we will not fail. We'll talk more next week.
All right, let's do that. Thank you for listening. We hope today's topic connected with you and helped you reflect on the work leaders do to get out of a narrow focus on one future and into a broader range of plausible alternatives.
If you'd like to connect with us, find us at leadersandfutures.com.
And if you would like to learn more about leadership and future studies, we have several programs to help you at the Institute for Leadership and Strategic Foresight.
Until next time, be great.